Good day, and welcome to the Match Group Reports Q4 2015 Results Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Chief Financial Officer, Gary Swidler. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the first Match Group earnings call for the fourth quarter of 2015. We are delighted to have you all join us this morning. I'm Gary Swidler, the Chief Financial Officer of Match Group, and Greg Blatt, our Chairman and CEO, is here as well. As a reminder, we released our prepared remarks in advance of the call, and they were posted to our website. We will therefore not read them on this call, and we'll go right to Q&A. Before we get to the Q&A, I'd like to remind you that during this call, we may discuss our outlook and future performance. These forward-looking statements typically may be preceded by words such as "we expect," "we believe," "we anticipate," or similar statements. These statements are subject to risk and uncertainties, and our actual results could differ materially from the views expressed today. Some of these risks have been set forth in our earnings release and our periodic reports filed with the SEC. With that, operator, we can go ahead and open the line for questions.
Perfect. Just a reminder to participants, if you would like to ask a question today, you may press star and one on your touch-tone phone. Again, that's star and one on your touch-tone phone. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. We'll go ahead and take our first question from Ross Sandler. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Great. Just had two questions, one on Tinder and then one on core for Gary or Greg. It sounds like Tinder had another strong quarter in 4Q, accelerating the PMC adds versus the prior two quarters. Where do you see Tinder's PMCs at the end of 2016, and which of the paid products are working the best to drive that growth? The second question for core dating, ex Tinder, ex Plenty of Fish. It sounds like the PMC growth was basically flattish again in 4Q. Is that likely to get meaningfully better in 2016? From the prepared remarks, you guys called out that mobile penetration's getting a little bit more mature, saturated. When do you feel like that's going to go from a headwind to a tailwind? Thank you.
Hey, Ross. First, let me say that for some crazy reason, we decided to do this from Los Angeles. For those of you on the West Coast who get up and do these things at 4:00 in the morning on a regular basis in the dark, I have a great deal of respect for you. Our circadian rhythms are all screwed up here, so hopefully we'll be coherent as we answer these questions. On Tinder, it was a great quarter. We talked about October 1, we launched Superlike as a conversion feature, and that drove up conversion on the Tinder Plus product. As we talked about sort of ad nauseam throughout the IPO process, you have two things that drive sort of increasing payer penetration in one of these businesses. The first is simply the passage of time as you have retention and you add more subs. Adding subs at a steady state basis drives significant sort of PMC growth. Also as you add new features, they sort of have a broader appeal. We effectively got a lift in Q4 in overall conversion rate from the launch of a new feature. That drives the increased rate of PMC growth. While I've said before, our main focus for this year is not necessarily adding new monetization features. New monetization features will come along throughout the year. We feel really good about it. I think that, as I've said multiple times, Tinder is harder to predict than some of our other businesses, meaning we knew Superlike would be a good bump, but we couldn't predict precisely where it was. It exceeded our expectations a little bit. I think right now when we think about PMC for the year, I think that it is well within reason to double PMC by the end of the year in Tinder. We may beat that, we may come in a little short. Either way, we'll see tremendous PMC growth. Tinder is harder to predict. You think about revenue, you're trying to predict the difference between, I don't know, I'm making this up, but 250% revenue growth year-over-year versus 227% revenue growth year-over-year. It's very hard. The growth is going to be fantastic. I think when we look at current rates of everything, we think doubling is a reasonable but ambitious goal for the year. We could be up or down on that a little bit. When you think about the business ex Tinder and POF, we were flattish this year. I think there are a lot of things that are going in. We're seeing improvements in number of trends, and I think that we will see sequential growth over the year, sort of through regular seasonality. But I think it wouldn't surprise me that overall we're sort of flattish in that business on a PMC basis this year, which is sort of what we talked about throughout the process, with that starting to accelerate in 17. Basically, you know, these sort of more established subscriber businesses are not very volatile, either on the up or the downside. And at any given time, your PMC count is a factor both of sort of new activity, but also even more predominantly of older activity, as sort of your older subs continue, your resub sort of base goes up or down. So while we think we will improve conversion throughout the year, we will pay something of a price this year for sort of the declines last year. And it, you know, as we've said, and you see the numbers, you had just huge jumps in mobile last year off of 14. And while we paid a meaningful price for that, the numbers themselves weren't that volatile. Instead of dropping, they sort of flatten out. And so that stability is a benefit when things are a little bit challenging. And then when things are rebounding, it takes a little while to sort of see that pay out in the sub count. So I think thinking about it as sort of flattish this year with sort of the same dynamics leading to growth next year as we continue to drive up conversion and the mobile challenge or mobile sort of year-over-year pressure sort of softens is the way we think about the business.
Yeah, and again, that's consistent with the numbers we've been talking about and kind of what we've been saying, so that's consistent with our expectations.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Next question, please.
Thank you, and we'll go ahead and take our next question from John Blackledge. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Great, thanks. A couple questions. So for 1Q16, do you expect Tinder net sub ads to accelerate from 4Q levels? And how are the core North American match sub trends thus far in the quarter? And do you expect that that segment or that cohort to be up or down in the quarter? And then in the prepared remarks, you mentioned stepping up investments in advertising. Can you discuss kind of where the investments will be? Was headcount, you know, technology for analytics, et cetera, and maybe perhaps provide an update on Tinder advertising expectations for 2016. Thank you.
Sure. In terms of Q1 Tinder, I don't expect it to accelerate further. Again, I think that you've got the dynamics that I talked about in terms of, you know, you need to sort of add new features in order to accelerate. Otherwise, it's sort of coming at sort of more of a steady state thing, and I don't think we have any big monetization features planned for Q1. And if anything, I think that what you expect and what we saw in Q4 is you get your biggest burst. You get your biggest burst when you launch a new feature, and then it comes down a little bit, although at a higher level. So if you looked at it, excuse me. If you actually looked at it on a monthly basis instead of a quarterly basis, you had a big pop in October when we launched the feature, and then November and December settled down below October, but higher than where it was in sort of July, August, September. So you get somewhere in between, and that's the way sort of you build these things. And so without another pop, I'd actually expect it to come down a little bit off of Q4 in terms of pure net adds, but higher than Q3 and Q2. In terms of core, the trends are good. You know, the as we said, we're benefiting from two things. One, some improved conversion, and two, the sort of slowdown, although continuing shift to mobile, just not as fast as it was. So those help. At the same time, we are, as I mentioned in the last question, you still have your resub bases down, your continuing sub bases down. So I think that those dynamics will play out over the year, but we're very pleased with what we're seeing in Q1 in terms of the things that we control. In terms of advertising, I think, look, a lot of it is headcount. There's also a lot of technology, analytics technology, et cetera, that we need to license. You know, Tinder currently serves its ads on LiveRail, which is Facebook, and LiveRail is sort of Facebook shutting that down, so we need to migrate there. Whole bunch of things happening. Also, you know, to really grow the ad business at Tinder, we also have to make some product change and that sort of thing, and so that has to fight for space on the roadmap. against other things that we're doing that we're really excited about on sort of the customer experience side. So I think, you know, as we said throughout sort of the IPO process, I think that we're going to be laying a lot of infrastructure this year to build that ad business. We will also have growth this year, but I think as planned, perhaps even a little more than planned, the expense ramp, you know, is a forerunner of the revenue ramp in this business. You need to hire salespeople, you need to license the technology, et cetera. We're going pretty aggressively at that, but I think that the numbers that sort of I've seen out there on the indirect side are, you know, I don't have a lot to add to them, I think, in terms of, you know, big ramps or anything else. I think that story is going to be much more of a 2017 story when it starts to meaningfully sort of change revenue trajectory
on
there.
The revenue side.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're just saying is on the expenses, we're working, you know, the first thing is to hire people. We're doing that as quickly as we can. If we can find good people faster, we'll hire them, which will have a little bit of an effect on expenses in the sooner quarters, but we think that is the right thing to do from the business perspective.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, John. Next question, please.
Thank you, and we'll go ahead and take our next question from Peter Stabler. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the question. A couple. Greg, could you comment, how do you think about the pacing of launching new features on Tinder in terms of your roadmap? And is there anything you can advise to us in terms of like how you approach the calendar? You had the super like. How much of a pause before we see additional features? Or is it more of a kind of build as fast as you can and throw stuff against the wall, as you kind of suggested OkCupid has done in the past? And then secondly, wondering, though it's early, wondering if you could comment on, if only directionally, on what you're seeing in terms of retention rate among Tinder PMCs. Thanks so much.
Yeah, Peter. I think we are generally on about a bi-monthly product release cycle. Bi-monthly means every 2 months, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Every 2 months we do a product release. Now, those product release cycles aren't always about Tinder Plus, obviously. I think that, you know, we've sort of reorganized so that we have a small team that's dedicated to Tinder Plus. You know, historically, sort of, you know, it was a combined product team and sort of you fought for space on the roadmap. I think here we're sort of having a dedicated group of people who are working on sort of monetization and then sort of a much larger group of people working on everything else. We just did a release this past week, you know, did a whole bunch of things that were not revenue focused. We sort of got hung up in the App Store, but last night we actually launched a new revenue feature, which is sort of our first a la carte feature where you can sort of purchase additional super likes on an a la carte basis. That's sort of in test and sort of figuring out what the, you know, what the right pricing for that ought to be and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, we have big ambitions for a la carte sort of revenue ultimately, but, you know, these are things that you sort of roll out over time and you see what works and what doesn't work. So I think that we will see steady work on the Tinder Plus side over the course of the year, but they may not be big visible things. There's also lots of pricing optimization and stuff like that that we've never done before. So I think there will be some seamless, some invisible stuff that happens on the Tinder Plus side. There will be some visible stuff that happens. I think something will happen every 2 months. But I think our bigger focus, frankly, right now and where a lot of our resources are being allocated are we've got some really exciting sort of ideas, we think, on the product side that we think will really drive engagement, drive new user growth, et cetera. We're sort of very focused on doing that, and we've got a lot of good ideas there. So that's sort of the way I would see the product roadmap unfolding over the course of the next year.
And then the back half of the question was on retention of Tinder PMC and how we think.
Oh, it's very solid. You know, you're still, when you've got a business like this, you're trying to figure out, there's two things that happen. There's renewals and then there's resubscriptions. And so you're trying to figure out what the natural rhythm is for sort of straight renewals versus terminations and resubscriptions. When you add it all together, we continue to see more positive metrics in that regard than we do in our other businesses. So we're really happy about those characteristics of the Tinder Plus business.
Thanks, Greg.
Okay, thank you. Next question, please.
Thank you. We'll go ahead and take our next question from Nat Schindler. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, hi, guys. Two questions.
One, a little bit follow-up on that last question about whether or not after this 9 months of, or I guess almost a year now, of Tinder Plus subscriber behavior, you've seen significant differences between how a Tinder subscriber behaves versus a core Match subscriber, and whether and how those that would play out on the longer term. Also, can you go into a little more detail on the non-dating businesses, specifically what caused the fall off from your expectations, and additionally, you know, maybe on a broader sense, why does this? What's strategic about this business inside Match?
Sure. On the Tinder side, as I say, we do have 9 months-ish of data, and based on that 9 months of data, we're seeing better renewal and resubscription rates than we have at the other business. We're also, you know, obviously, as we've said, with the soft paywall versus the hard paywall, much lower conversion than we see to Match, so those are dynamics. But there's still a lot we don't know. We introduced long-term packages, and people haven't started to roll off those long-term packages yet. So you make predictions about how renewal and resub rates will happen off of that, but you haven't seen that yet. So there's still lots of things that we haven't seen. But the things we've seen so far have been very positive. Again, you've got you can think about it in three dimensions. Conversion's worse, pricing is lower, resub and renewal rates are higher. And that's sort of those are the characteristics of the business. So far, we're really excited about it. On the Prince review question, yeah. Look, I think our strategy in that business is not a sort of near-term revenue growth strategy. Although we are expecting to grow revenue, you know, we got a business that was, you know, $100+ million and losing money, and our play here is to really transform that business. And that transformation will lead to sort of much higher margin characteristics. And frankly, although this isn't our plan, I would take an $80 million revenue business that makes $25 million in EBITDA over the other way around. And so we've been focused very much on margin improvements. I think you can see this year we went Q4, which is our first real full year over comparison. We went from, I don't have the numbers handy, but I think from a $5 million EBITDA loss to about a $700,000 EBITDA loss. And that's really the progress that we were focused on. There's a lot of noise in the test prep business. There are two very discrete things that happened this quarter, which is one, we were signing a contract with the U.S. government, and it signed 2.5 months later than we thought. That cost us $2 million of revenue, just moved it back, and at the time we expected to get it done earlier, and it didn't. And the other was there's a big change in the SAT this year. It happens every 10 years or so. And we made a prediction about how test takers would, you know, we thought some would rush to take the old test, more of them sort of pause to take the new test than we expected. Cost us revenue doesn't really cost us on the bottom line. And, you know, what we're focused on is really two things. One is migrating the business online. And this quarter was the first time we were up over 50% in our services revenue being online, which is a big deal for us. The more that business migrates online, the more what one would ordinarily think of as fixed costs ultimately become variable costs. As you're delivering more of the service online, although it's not unit economics in bulk, you start to be able to reduce your real estate and your instructor costs and all that sort of stuff, and it transforms the business. And the second piece is, and this was really the main thesis under which we bought the Princeton Review, is that, you know, we had sort of this business that sold tutoring to people, and that was sort of a service business that, you know, helps people get better grades. And Princeton Review sold a test prep business, which helped people get better test scores. And there was this little startup that helped people with college counseling. And we realized these were actually sort of three parts of one product, which is getting your kids into college, and that the exact same customer who buys these things are focused on all three of these things. And we believe that if we could create a unified sort of product offering under a sort of powerful brand, that we could create something really, really valuable here. And I think we spent all of 2015, I just lost 3 years, 2015 sort of integrating the technology, and we sort of turned it on in Q4, and, you know, over 10% of our Print and Review test prep customers bought one of our other two products. And you know, that is a huge sort of jump start on this process. And we think that through the combination of moving that business online overall and sort of creating these sort of packages where a parent sort of turns to Print and Review for all the things necessary to maximize their kids' chances to getting into college, we think we've got a very powerful business there. So I think this year we're forecasting revenue growth. I think we're much less focused on revenue growth this year than we are on these margin improvements and these driving these other metrics. And, you know, we're still trying to sort out sort of what revenue we want and what revenue we don't want in this business, and that will continue to evolve, meaning we're not chasing all revenue because there's higher margin revenue and lower margin revenue, and we're still trying to figure out where to sort of put our cards here. In terms of the strategic question, I mean, look, the reason that we think it's strategic, although that's a word that you can obviously manipulate in any way you want, is that we think it requires a lot of the same core competencies that we have. It's an LTV business. It's an online service business being delivered that charges for money. That charges money. It's not advertising driven at core. We have a lot of expertise in driving conversion, in managing these customer relationships, in lifetime value marketing and product driving. And, you know, again, we had the sort of the old Match team over running that business. We've now obviously moved some of those people back to the Match business, but they did a lot of work over the course of last year in transforming and creating this product machine that is now starting to hum. And I think those synergies continue to go on an operational basis across those borders.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. And just a reminder to participants, that is star and one on your touchtone phone to ask a question. We'll take our next question from Eric Sheridan. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks for taking the questions. Maybe just two clarifiers from the prepared remarks. One on ARPU. I think there's a lot of noise out there with the decline in ARPU, but also sort of backing into what the mix-adjusted ARPU is. On our math, mix-adjusted was a lot better than the headline number. Just wanted to know if we could get a little bit of color on ARPU mix across properties. And number two, when we look through the EBITDA guide, just want to back into, is that sort of implying a range of around $400-$450 million? Just want to make sure we're reading the comments. That's right. Thank you.
I'll take the ARPU question, and I'll give Gary the guide question. I think, look, there is a lot of noise in the numbers driven by, you know, and again, this is not new news. We've been talking about this a lot, and this is following exactly what we expected, which is you've got mix shift into you've got an increasing number of our subscribers coming in businesses with lower ARPU products, and the advent of Plenty of Fish is sort of a step function in that. I think if you look at each of our businesses alone and to see whether or not they're driving up rate, I think all our businesses are driving up rate. I think in Q4, but I think generally, sorry, what I mean is in Q4, I think that's true, and generally speaking going forward, I think it's true, although in any given quarter, things can move around a little bit. So rate is going up everywhere except two businesses. Meetic is coming down a bit as a larger percentage of their subscriber base takes longer-term packages, which are lower priced. That is by design. They're sort of behind our other businesses in doing that. And the same is true at Tinder, where we've just introduced longer-term packages, and that also will bring down ARPU, but increases LTV. The reason you switch people into longer-term packages is that ultimately you collect more cash from them, even though they are lower ARPU. So you've got noise. You've also, this quarter, you've got deferred revenue noise from the Plenty of Fish acquisition. It's not in for the whole quarter, so there's a fair amount of noise in it. But in general, what we've been saying is holding true, which is our products are generally, pricing is going up, which is, again, a mix of a lot of things. There's discounting, which brings it down. There's package mix that brings it down. But then there's increased pricing, and there's add-ons and all sort of stuff. So the overall mix is leading to rate increases everywhere but those two businesses. But mix is bringing the aggregate ARPUs down.
In terms of the guidance, let me just spend a minute generally on kind of how we thought about this. First of all, on the revenue guidance, you know, we gave a range of 5 to 7% sequential quarterly growth for 16. And, you know, we're comfortable in that range. It will vary a little bit quarter to quarter in that range, but that's the range that we're comfortable in, which gets you to kind of low 20s revenue growth for the year, and we think that's a reasonable expectation. So that's how we were thinking about it. You know, it's a number that we think is achievable, and we expect to be within the range in each quarter. In terms of the margin guidance, the margin guidance follows kind of our typical seasonality patterns. You know, we have our heaviest spending quarter in the first quarter, and so we talk about, you know, kind of 20s margins in the first quarter. We start to see the benefits of that spending in the second and the third quarter from some of our businesses like Match, and so we expect margins will improve. And overall, we've given the guidance for the year in the high 30s range, and we think that's what we can achieve, and that's kind of typical if you look back historically where the margin has been. So that's how we thought about the guidance.
I don't think I can see the 450.
EBITDA numbers?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it gets you into that range of EBITDA numbers if you use the revenue ranges that we assume.
Great. Thanks for the color, guys.
Thank you. And we'll go ahead and take our next question from Jason Helfstein. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks. Maybe, Greg, talk a bit more about marketing efficiency. You talked in the past how TV has had reduced efficiency for you, particularly in 2015, even though you guys have had a very refined marketing funnel. Kind of maybe give us an update, like where are we now with the marketing funnel, particularly thinking about more like the legacy brands, so Match, Meetic, OkCupid. You know, where are we in that point? And then secondly, I know part of the focus is going to be to try to cross-sell more of the, you know, Plenty Fish and OkCupid to consumers who may go to, you know, Match or Meetic but are unlikely to convert. Maybe give us an update on how that's going and if you think that could ultimately help accelerate sub growth in the back half of the year. Thanks.
Okay, Jason. On marketing efficiency, there's sort of two, we look at the funnel in two ways, right? When you think about marketing efficiency, the first is sort of how easy or how expensive or how cheap or whatever it is to attract a registration, a new user. And then there's sort of how good you are converting them. And those two things together, along with pricing and retention, all that, but that stuff is a little flatter, that drives marketing efficiency. On the top of the funnel part, cost per registration continues to be good. Yeah, TV, you know, it's changing dynamics, and TV is probably a little worse than it was, but again, we've taken Facebook and turned that into our number two marketing channel, and that's been good for us on the mobile side and everything else. So I think overall, you know, we're seeing our efficiency on that side hold pretty solid. You know, our TV's up a little bit this year. It's up a lot in Europe in terms of efficiency. So it's still the same things. Good campaigns drive good results, and we're seeing the same sort of responsiveness to our marketing spend as we always have. As we've said, however, conversion, you know, has taken a tumble over the last year, and so overall ROI on marketing spend is down versus where it was, and we expect to build that up again over the course of the year, as we've discussed, which should lead to sort of a re-ramping of marketing spend. You know, right now in this quarter, we're sort of flattish over last year in terms of marketing spend because ROI is down a little bit due to the conversion. And we, you know, for right or wrong, we're a company that likes to deliver on a mix of both top line and bottom line growth. And so rather than ramp up marketing with ROI down a little bit, we're sort of holding it flat, and then we'll ramp it up as we drive conversion over the course of the year. In terms of cross-sell, I think that there are big ambitions in this area, as we've talked about. We haven't really done historically much cross-selling or portfolio management or portfolio customer management crossing the borders between the OkCupid, Plenty of Fish, Tinder, and Match, et cetera. We haven't done that yet. That is a focus for this year. Whether or not it pays big dividends this year versus next year, I don't know. I think it's something we're pretty cautious about. We test into. Tests last a long time because you want to see downstream behavior. You know, you want to see not only did you get them over here, but what does that do to their ultimate resub and renewal characteristics down the road across the portfolio. And so this is a gradual investment that we'll make, and I think that we'll make real progress on understanding the impacts on the ecosystem this year, and I think a real benefit should come next year.
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you. And just a reminder to participants, that is star and one on your touch-tone phone to ask a question. We'll take our next question from Dan Salmon. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Greg, you mentioned in the prepared remarks, and it's been clear on this call a little bit, and anyone who's been paying attention would notice it, that the pace of product releases at Tinder has picked up quite a bit in the back half of the year, especially since the fall. Do you see that being a sort of temporary ramp-up, or do you see the cadence of product releases staying at an elevated level? And then second, just maybe your current thoughts on the competitive environment for it and how that plays into your thinking on product updates.
All right. I think it's definitely not temporary. I think it will increase. I don't know that frequency will increase, meaning it might, but right now we're basically on a two-month cycle. But we're ramping resources, and the breadth of our releases are getting broader every time. We think that we have an insatiable appetite for product enhancement, improvement, and broadening. We have a huge wealth of ideas and initiatives that we're working behind, some of them very big and sort of hopefully newsworthy, others that are invisible and help speed and scale and security and all these sorts of things. And we're a huge, huge global product now, and I expect this to absolutely continue. I think that we're seeing great elasticity and responsiveness in the product. I think that given our sort of unparalleled scale in this category, I think we have opportunities to do things on product that no one else can. And I think you talk about the competitive side. I don't really think about it the way I think a lot of other people do, which is there's always been competition in this space despite sort of a sense right now that there's more competition than there's been. I've been doing this for 7 or 8 years, and I know there were times when eHarmony was breathing down our neck, and Yahoo Personals used to be the second biggest. And how about we? There were a million things that were always sort of coming at us. Our approach is to absolutely positively nail product. I think that Tinder in particular has the possibility to be the first sort of dating product to really become its, I mean, it sort of already is somewhat, but to sort of firmly transplant itself into its own category of product. And that's really what we're focused on doing, and we're excited about it. I think also, just one thing to point out on the competitive side, we're a business that we have got a lot of businesses that do paid marketing. We've got a lot of businesses that grow organically. And I think that we are huge fans of paid marketing, but there are also very different characteristics between those businesses. And I think a lot of the businesses that you're hearing about sort of being really competitive are spending a lot of money in paid marketing, and Tinder doesn't do that. And so our focus is really to continue to drive growth through product features, word of mouth, and sort of being the most sort of vital product out there, and we feel very good about our plans for doing that.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, and we'll go ahead and take our next question from Brandon Ross. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for taking the question. Just wanted to get a little more granular on the international versus the domestic businesses. The international legacy businesses appear to be more stable now, while the domestic seems to be much more challenged. Just wanted to find out what the difference is there. And on the mix shift to mobile, you say that the effect is slowing, but if we look at the legacy North American PMC, when we back into it, it seems to have declined at a much more rapid rate in Q4 than in prior quarters. So just hoping you could reconcile that. Thanks.
Sure. On the international versus domestic, I think international has performed better of late. I think that a lot of that is about execution. They really just nailed product execution. They did a really good job with their product this year. Their marketing is going well. I think they've really performed really nicely. Conversion, I mentioned, I think, in the remarks that their mobile conversion is up ahead of North American mobile conversion. And, again, we're on different platforms and different product stacks, and so things happen at different paces. I think not to take away anything from what they did internationally, which was fantastic. You know, the U.S. team also had its hands full doing a lot of the platform rebuild that it did this past year. I think resources are freeing up there. As we said, you know, we just launched a new Android app, which, you know, had huge sort of improvements. Fortunately, Android's a relatively small part of the business, but getting bigger. And I think it's representative of the kind of upside that we've got. So I think that, you know, we fully expect North American performance to sort of catch up to international performance this year. Again, we made a management change. I think there's no one better at driving product conversion than Shar Dubey, and there's no one better driving the top of the funnel than Mandy Ginsberg. And we're really excited about where that business is going to go this year. Although, as I said in prior questions, the nature of these subscription businesses and what we call our waterfall, which is, you know, at any given time, what percentage of your paid subscribers are people who sort of have come in recently versus people who came in before, means that you will see an ongoing drag for a while. And that's really the Q4 story, which is, yes, the sort of ongoing mobile pressure is lightening, but you're feeling the effects of sort of the prior quarters. It never manifests itself in the quarter. It manifests itself, you know, you're, this may not be precisely right, but in general, your Q4 sub-performance is frankly much more related to your Q2 activity than to your Q4 activity, just because of the nature of sort of the relative size of the waterfall. So there's a lag effect, and it's why I think even with the improvements we make this year, we think we're sort of looking at flattish for those businesses over the course of the year.
Great. And just also on Tinder, again, looking at domestic versus international, you spoke in the prepared remarks to user growth continuing to be strong across all geographies, but you didn't give the same color for paid sub growth. Can you just sort of talk to the differences in paid sub growth in the domestic business versus international? Thanks.
Yeah, sorry. It is very comparable. I didn't mean to I would have to go back and look at my remarks. I did not mean to draw a distinction there. I think we said that sort of the international businesses were made up about, you know, more than 60% of both the users and the subscribers. The user growth and subscriber growth is relatively mirrored. I think that if you look at just the, put differently, I talked about the Q4 being up 50% in net adds of PMC sort of over the prior quarters, that held basically, you know, within a few percentage points, both for North America and for international. So there's no distinction there.
Great. Thank you.
I just want to go back to one thing on Eric's question, then we'll take the last question. Just want to make sure I heard him right. I thought I heard him say, if you do the math with the range of 5 to 7% revenue growth, you get to a 400 to 450 kind of EBITDA range, which I think is accurate. So if he said a point like 450, I don't want to kind of confuse people and say I'm confirming that. I'm just saying that that gets you to a range of 400 to 450, which is what we're trying to
do. Very broad range.
It is a broad range. So I just want to make sure I was clear on that. And if I wasn't, I'm sorry. Last question, operator, please.
Thank you. We'll go ahead and take our last question from Douglas Anmuth. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks for taking the question. A couple things. First, just on the mobile conversion, you talk about in the letter how the improvement is based on the effort you're able to put toward it. So just wanted to kind of understand better what the factors are that might be constraining you here around exerting more of that effort. Is it kind of the tech rebuild or what other resource constraints there might be? And then also on Tinder, can you talk about just overall engagement growth, how you're feeling about it from an MAU basis, not just from PMCs, and then also about some of the changes you've made on the algorithms in particular over the last few months. Thanks.
Great, Doug. Let's see. I think, as I mentioned in the last question, I think in the U.S. in particular, there have been some constraints on resources due to the technology rebuild. I also think that last year just wasn't a great year for execution on the product side. I think that, although, again, you know, the Android win that we just had is tremendous, and that was obviously work all done last year. So I think that we are focused on devoting more and more resources to the mobile side. One of the big reasons we're doing the tech rebuild is because historically we've had to sort of tackle desktop and then tackle Android and then tackle iOS, and we've had to do that from scratch. And I think now as we continue to evolve in this, sort of the back end work starts to get more centralized across all of these platforms, which allows more focus on the front end piece, which drives a lot of this. So I think sort of we're turning our attention next really to mobile web, which is the area that we are, you know, probably lacking the most in our conversion. And so I think you will see a lot of it going forward. And if you talk about effort, more of it will be allocated to it this year, certainly, than was last year. I think the next question was on Tinder MAU. Yeah, I mean, look, MAUs grow. MAU grows faster than new users, obviously. January was our biggest month ever for new user growth at Tinder. But MAUs grow because we've driven up engagement year over year. You know, DAU to MAU, reg to MAU, all that is higher than it was. So we continue to drive that, and it continues to be very solid. Obviously, you get a lot of large numbers at some point where we're no longer growing MAU, 200% a month. But it's great growth, and this is we're very much in unprecedented territory here. In terms of the algorithms, everything else, as we said in another question, the cadence of product change has been increasing. The algorithm is driving better match rates, better conversation rates. All of that stuff ultimately translates into better engagement, better customer satisfaction, better word of mouth. So we're now finishing our third year as a company here, and I think I wish our analytics were better. I wish, there's a million things that sort of you don't have that lets you connect all the dots. But in general, we're doing a lot of these things. A lot of our metrics are getting better, and overall retention and engagement are improving. So we feel really good about that.
Okay.
You're welcome. I think I know there was the last question, but there was one point I wanted to hit because I sort of assumed we'd get a question on it and didn't. So I figured I'd answer it anyway since it didn't make it into the prepared remarks. And the question of Tinder cannibalization is something that has been sort of tossed around a lot over the last couple of years, and it's something that I've sort of always sort of said, look, I think there's some degree of cannibalization that every product, think of it as gravity, every product exerts some force on every other product, and the bigger the product, the bigger the force that it exerts, and that's sort of natural. But I've also said that when you actually look at the numbers, whatever force it is, isn't big enough to sort of make a dent in the numbers. And we sort of just pulled some numbers, and I said, look, Tinder continues to be predominantly sort of an under 35-year-old product. Those numbers haven't changed much. And so to the extent that you see cannibalization, you'd see a change in sort of the overall mix of age of users in our non-Tinder products over time. And the reality is when you back Tinder out of our businesses and you look at them in both North America and Europe, our mix of under 35 users is actually up over the last 3 years and not down. And so while Tinder may have some cannibalistic effect, the impact it has on bringing new users under 35 into the overall ecosystem and then the impact that those users have on our pre-existing product through having brought into the category far outweighs any cannibalism that we've got. And so, you can think about it as it may be true that a 25-year-old person who's choosing between dating products today may be less likely to choose Match than they were 4 years ago. Tinder has made it so there are far more 25-year-old people who are choosing between dating products than there used to be, and the net effect of that has been that sort of growth in that category has actually increased, or mix of users in that category has actually increased across our other businesses and not declined. And so I think just people should keep that in mind as they think about sort of Tinder and whether or not it's a net positive to the system. It not only is by definition a net positive because it's so big, but it's actually a net positive to the business ex Tinder as well. And I think that's a point I wanted to make. So thank you all very much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure going through our first quarterly earnings process. Next time we will make sure that it is light out when we do this, and now we're going back to bed. So thanks, everybody.
And that does conclude today's program. We'd like to thank you for your participation. Have a wonderful day, and you may disconnect at any time.